Cool. Well, I'm Matt Golter, I'm in the Arcata office. I've been with NOAA for almost 10 years, and I've worked in the EEL for almost 20. So Scott did a good job. Scott and Samantha did a good job setting the stage, and we actually have some of the same slides. So anyway, a couple of different perspectives there. So what I think is kind of interesting is our NIMS team structure on the petition and our response to the petition is our Protected Resources Division is the lead, and they're up in Oregon, or the staff that's leading this effort is in Oregon. Gary Rule, and this process relies heavily on our Science Center for genetics and status and things like that, and that's Tommy Williams down in Santa Cruz. So here I am in kind of no man's land, you know, in between, to bridge that gap and kind of serve as the local knowledge, perhaps. And so we have, just wanted to point out that we have a team approach and kind of the three, the three peg bent or three legged stool. So I guess my main point here is to go through the process. Thanks to Scott, the petition's already been prepared. We received the petition, so you can check that box. That was, much harder than it sounded probably, but because the federal process and the state process.
Because the government was closed when they petitioned?
What's that?
Because the government was closed when you tried to petition.
And I stepped on our shoelaces doing it.
So we require that the petition is also sent to the state. So that was a hiccup too. And then we shut down and all that fun stuff too. So that has a role here too. So anyway, we received the petition, and I put little red checks for here we are in the process right now, and we just, basically issued our 90-day finding back in March, and that finding basically says that the petition provided, sufficient information for us to proceed. So here we are, I kind of call this the big box. So we're right here, we're at public comment, we're compiling data. Like Darren kicked us off, this morning, is that there's a real lack of data and a lot of question marks out there. So this is a key point here. So hopefully all of you are sending in your information right now, especially Samantha. Because when we head over to this kind of big box process, there's a lot, call it the big box, there's a lot going on there. Because we're combining all the public comment, getting organized, assessing species.
Scott? The deadline's June 28th, I think?
June 21st.
June 21st.
I was going to get there too, yeah. So that's an important note, yeah.
Solstice, that's right. Yeah.
So yeah, that information and the public comment is probably going to be huge for the, this bigger box exercise where we're, going to decide whether or not it's appropriate to split the species is kind of the first step, and if yes, then we go through the status and threats and extinction risk, some of the other items people covered. And so I also need to point out that this 90 days is part of the 1 year in theory, but we have the shutdown wedged in the middle here. So this proposed rule should be at the 1 year mark, and that includes the 90 days. So my scale's messed up. So if it is warranted and NIMS does the status review and comes up with the extinction risk, then that final listing, or that final decision would, go out for public review and comment again. There's the same map Scott showed, and he mentioned there's 10 or 12 populations, depending on how you count them, and that's kind of a loose end that we left. We basically say there's 10, but in the land of recovery permitting or recovery work, we have to have a goal, a delisting goal for each diversity strata. So in the case of Mad River and Redwood Creek, they overlap two strata. So a coastal and a North Mountain interior. So we're supposed to have two different targets, but we only have one because we recognize, like Samantha showed us, that these fish are kind of upstream animals, and why would we have goals for these coastal areas. Well, that's a little bit of a loose end. So this is the status review, kind of that big box where you go through the basic biology, assess the threats, do a demographic risk analysis, which is kind of basically leads you to extinction risk. SPR is a significant portion of range analysis. And our headquarters asked us to do this for the Upper Klamath Trinity River Spring Chinook petition. So more on that a little later.
And that real quick, so is there going to be a point where we actually re-examine the population structure of Sun Run, or do you think it's just going to...
I don't think so. Well, maybe someday, but...
Okay. Wouldn't you have to do that when you do a status update?
Well, we don't usually review the population structure. Carlos has already pointed out that our winter run population structures are not perfect as well. That's a good question. I'm not really sure when we revisit that, because that's kind of like the foundation for recovery planning and setting delisting targets.
Seems like a status review would be the time that you would do that.
Right. But that's a good question. I don't know. I'm not aware of us ever doing that. So anyway, under the threats, for those of you that read biological opinions, I'm sorry, but this is what NIMSTAF calls the five factors. I better speed up. It's the habitat, I'll paraphrase. The habitat being messed up, are the species being oversold, overcaught, or overstudied? Is there disease predation of human forms or in ecology? So this is Scott Downey's pickup truck. I tried to use some local pictures. This is the Van Dusen River, Highway 101. And the point here is that threats do change over time. And 10 years ago, we had an enormous threat on the Van Dusen River with passage and hundreds of fish dying. And that threat's almost a memory now. It's improving, and that threat's been abated. And on the topic of threats, you might think I'm going to talk about the blob here, and I am going to talk about the blob, but a couple weeks ago at SRF, Gordy Reeves hinted, I don't know how many of you heard, but that, he hinted that he wouldn't be surprised to see the steelhead life history vanish.
Yeah.
Because here is all of our steelhead, where they go to rear in the ocean, and so you can wedge that blob in there with its warmer water, and how that overlaps with the historic rearing grounds and creates kind of a migration impediment. And like Gordy brought up, these fish are changing their routes, and there's a lot of new stresses and threats, this changing climate and our changing ocean. Anyhow, and I have to wonder, what's this mean for summer steelhead? And with problems in the ocean getting worse, is that going to select for the summer life history that has less time in the ocean? There's our favorite project. There's basically, that big box exercise we get to the extinction risk. To get there is a demographic risk analysis, which is basically our VSP parameters of viable salmonid population that McElhaney came up with. And you see this in our recovery plans and biological opinions. What I think is kind of cool about this is our headquarters is using the VSP parameters for a lot of species like leatherback sea turtles and others. So. And this is Cape Horn Dam and our fish ladder, and I just want to point out that a lot of us are focused on Scott Dam, but they have to get through this to get there first, and we're having a lot of issues here too. So here's a quick kind of 20-minute VSP look I tried to throw together. And so here's our 10 populations from the recovery plan, with our split diversity strata of asterisks. And I tried to just quickly search available data to see, which of these 10 populations even have fish anymore.
Yeah.
And, like this morning started, there's lots of question marks. We only know a little bit. And then if you look at the abundant side of things, we know less. And like this 1999, you know, claim that there was less than 100 fish was from Pat. Wish he was here, but yeah, there's really not much data. And what I did notice in trying to find the most recent estimates is most recently is almost the height of the times in a lot of these areas. So these are, if you look back in history, the numbers, you know, dip down a little worse. So this effective population size is just your basic, you know, minimum population size to avoid the compensatory problems of inbreeding or not being able to find a mate. Scott brought this up already. I just wanted to throw it out there because, you know, the petition for spring run Chinook on the Klamath is an ESU exercise, and probably a lot of us are looking to that petition to see if our hints for what's to come with summer run, and so I'll just point that out. Scott covered this well already, but you know, that's an ESU exercise, and we're in the DPS mode here with summer steelhead. And I just want to end with, you know, we have tons of question marks, and we don't know much. And you saw the data I found in 20 minutes, and I just wanted to really emphasize that our public comment period is about to close, and we need information if we're going to use the best available science. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Any questions for Matt as we're switching speakers here?
Yeah, could you amplify that last little asterisk comment there, congressional direction to exercise this authority sparingly? Is that something that's coming from the federal government to your agency in terms of consideration of these listings, like a directive?
Yeah, because the secretary does, you know, the secretary is the Secretary of Commerce, so yeah, this does.
So that's,
yeah, I don't know. I think this, you know, this was basically developed when the first DPS listing was made, and that at that time Congress said, you basically don't be doing this stuff all the time.
It's pretty conflicting statutory language though, because they're obligated to list if it's warranted by the science. So they can't just, out of discretion, decide, well, Congress told us to use this sparingly, and we're not going to do it, or else you're just an abuse of discretion. So it's kind of conflicting language.
Well, that was my next question, because the flow chart shows, you know, you get to a certain point, but then it seems like there's a subjective decision after that. And where is that made? Is it within the high up of the Department of Commerce?
I believe that's made, you know, back on that slide one with our team and the three components of our team with, you know, Protected Resources Division and the Science Center kind of being the true lead and co-lead.
So you're that team on the West Coast here would make some kind of recommendation.
Yeah, our recommendation would go east.
Okay.
Yeah. That's how the Klamath spring runs worked, you know, that our headquarters would review our rule package, essentially our determination, before it goes to the Federal Register.
I'd also point out there are 5 or 6 months past due on making a ruling.
Early days.
All right.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.